Welcome back to Stand. Today we're with Harmeet Dhillon, a world-renowned lawyer, civil rights advocate, but also someone who ran for chair of the Republican National Committee. Harmeet, what inspired you to do that?
I've been a member of the Republican National Committee since I was elected in 2016 by 1,500 California Republican delegates who in turn represent 5 million California Republicans. So among the members of the RNC, we have some who represent a pretty small number of people, and I represent a lot of them, and I take the fact that I represent 5 million California voters very seriously. And I frankly, you know, saw that we had lost a number of elections. Mm-hmm. And that's no one person's fault, but when you lose games season after season, typically the coach changes to give confidence to everybody involved in the system. And so that's just the way it is. And, you know, our chair had promised that she would leave after her third term, and then she announced for a fourth term, and I was the voice of many Republicans around the country who wanted a change. And so that's why I ran. I firmly believe that I could do a better job, and I thought that it was important to have a change, more importantly. Nothing personal against Rana. And so, you know, that's why I ran. And it was an amazing, I think for the first time I can ever recall in my life, there was a grassroots interest in who's running the RNC. So that's a good thing that people cared and wrote to their representatives. The representatives themselves did not particularly love to hear from the voters. That's a fact that I think we need to work on at the RNC. I personally love it. Of course, I'm in the public eye. I've been a media commentator and a, you know, lawyer who invites people from the public to contact me with their problems. I'm kind of like the answer desk for a lot of issues. So I'm used to hearing from citizens all day long, and I usually can't help them. Sometimes I can, but at least I know what's going on because I'm listening and seeing my text messages and emails. But some of my friends didn't really like that. So, you know, it was a very interesting experience.
So, but what's your vision? I mean, you ran because you wanted, I hear you saying you ran in part because you wanted to reverse the trend of this losing so many elections up and down the ballot. But what would you say your vision is for the future of the Republican Party going forward? And well, how can we achieve that?
Well, I hope the future includes winning a lot more elections than we have in the last few years. And again, that's no one person's fault. A lot of my colleagues would point the finger at the former president, Donald Trump, who I'm proud to represent. But in reality, these are simplistic answers to complex problems. I would say issue number one is money. The left vastly outspends us and has been doing so since they had their hat handed to them in 2004. So today, 19 years later, almost 20 years later, they have many billions of dollars sloshing around in hundreds of nonprofits and in PACs and in the pockets of lawyers like Mark Elias. Whereas Republicans are still quaintly expecting that volunteers are going to show up like a militia of lawyers with their laptops and drop what they're doing and go like do work for free. I see some conservatives criticizing paid voter registration efforts or paid ballot harvesting or engagement efforts to target low propensity Republican voters, saying, oh, we don't need to, you know, spend $100 to do that. We can, you know, do it for free. We can get some volunteers to do it. I, of course, the CEO will get paid, but these, you know, worker bees will do it for free. This is naive and, frankly, a recipe for losing. And that's why we keep losing, is we are totally outdated in the model. And we're not even copying effectively what the left is doing. And so much less innovating ahead of them, which is what we need to do. So that's what I would like to see. Typically, when you win or lose the White House, that's a time when there's a changeover in leadership. And so if we win with a Republican candidate in 2024, that Republican nominee/president will tell us who's the next chair of the RNC, and the RNC members will go along with that. If we don't, then it gets interesting. So I have many jobs, and one is the head of a law firm with 24 attorneys. The other is the head of an important nonprofit that does a lot of important work, and I'm a volunteer in politics. So I'm not planning to run for election again as the RNC chair. I hope somebody else steps forward and you know, has a great vision to win, and I hope they're not a D.C. swamp creature, but you know, this work does need to be done in D.C.
Yeah, I mean, that was really helpful in clarifying to hear that, you know, as Republicans, what I'm hearing you say is we really have to rethink how we approach elections and innovate and perhaps think differently about funding and be equally aggressive in how we approach our strategic objectives in the battleground states as our political opponents are.
I mean, I'm more aggressive is what I would say. So just to give you one example, the left can see that the abortion issue, which we finally won at the United States Supreme Court on the federal level, motivates a lot of voters. First, they tell the lie that the federal decision somehow affects their rights in their states. That is a lie, but they're very effective at communicating that. We're not very effective at pushing back. We pay political consultants. I won't name names here. I'm trying to not be ugly, but we pay some people a ton of money at the RNC every month to give us help with messaging, and messaging is terrible, frankly. And so what the left has done with that issue is not just talk about it. They've motivated their voters by putting ballot measures on their ballots to turn out the vote in 2024. They qualify them, they put the money behind them, they get the signatures, they get the propaganda going, and they're going to motivate left-wing voters to turn out to vote on this pet issue, and also, by the way, cast a vote for whatever morally bankrupt leftist happens to be their candidate. Where's our opposition to that? It doesn't have to be the abortion issue. It can be transgender issues. It can be parental rights issues. It can be the open border. It can be the fentanyl crisis in our country. Why aren't we funding and putting on the ballots of every state that we could possibly win ballot measures to turn out voters? Because voters are less and less motivated by the star power of some candidate. I mean, there's some who care about that. They're more concerned about $200 worth of groceries every week at the grocery store. They're concerned about fentanyl. They're concerned about, in San Francisco, they're concerned about taking a child on the streets or walking your dog lest they die of a, fentanyl overdose from touching something on the street. We have open borders. We have crime rampant in our communities. These issues motivate voters, so why don't we use them to turn them out? So these are some of the failures I see that we really need to fix.
That's a really good point, Harmeet. Nikki and I were talking about this. One of the questions we wanted to ask you, we're concerned about the fact that the last three cycles have largely been a losing streak for Republicans. We've just, I think at best we can say we've significantly underperformed up and down the ballot. And you may have just answered it in what you just said, but what would be your best advice for how Republicans can win in 2024? It's kind of a desperate situation where the Democrats, and by Democrats, I would say the leftists, I think there's a little bit of a difference between those two terms, hold the White House, they hold the Senate, and they virtually are controlling the House of Representatives because the Republicans have a hard time keeping their caucus together. So how do we shift the balance of power to where the Republicans can win, both at the federal and at the state levels?
Well, one of the things I promised to do if I'd been elected as chair of the RNC is basically do a top-down review of all consultants and fire the ones who don't perform. They are the big problem. So when you see, RNC posting outstanding numbers in fundraising, which we did throughout the Trump years, that's great. And by the way, fundraising is hard. I don't, want to, underestimate how difficult it is to go talk to people. But, a lot of that money came in automatically, through fundraising. But what happened to it? That's the question. So it's not, oh, did I raise $2 billion? How did I spend that $2 billion? Did I spend it on research on ballot measures and, helping qualify those? Did I spend it on lawyers to equalize? We did some of that. I and a couple of other lawyers pushed very hard for that. We're not really doing it this cycle. So how is the money spent is a really critical analysis. And what you find when you dig and you dig and you dig is the money is spent on a handful of failed political consultants to the tune of tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. And they get hired win or lose. They attach themselves to powerful members of Congress or Senate, NRCC, NRSC. No matter who's the head, these consultants are like the deep state of politics. They're like cockroaches. They survive any turnover in power. And, we keep paying them. That's crazy. It's ridiculous. It's a betrayal of our donors to use their money that way. And that's the number one thing I would have changed. And guess who combined forces to, make sure that I didn't win RNC chair is every political consultant in DC. So
That's really illuminating. Yeah.
Yeah, but luckily I don't make my career in politics. I don't pay my mortgage with politics, so I could say whatever I want. But most people involved in the political system are afraid to criticize those consultants because they control whether they get nominated, whether they get the money they need, and whether they win.
Yeah. Well, this has been extremely illuminating and inspiring. It sounds like we could kind of sum this up with people should get involved. You can make a difference. Be sure to vote. Get involved in the election integrity efforts in your area and hold your government leaders accountable. That would be like when you said people need to take a stand, that's the number one thing. Support your efforts at libertycenter.org because you're getting involved in the cases that really matter where people who otherwise don't have representation or a voice can help. Is there anything else you would add to the takeaways for today?
I would say to every citizen, tweeting isn't advocacy. If you really care about what's going on in your community, you know, put down the phone, the computer, go to a school board meeting, speak out, vote, go volunteer for a campaign that you like. It doesn't have to be a presidential campaign, it can be anything local, but get out there and do something about it. Don't fool yourself that rage tweeting or replying, being the reply guy, is activism. It isn't.
That's good. Don't make a stance, take a stand. Yeah, yep. We appreciate it. Harmeet Dhillon, thank you for being with us today. This is On Stand with Kelly Nikki Chewbacca. We'll be right back after this break. Go visit libertycenter.org and help them out. Hit subscribe at The Stand Show. We'll see you right after this break.